And welcome everybody back to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, the internet's most dangerous Ohio State news and athletics website. I am your host, Matt Brown. We are recording the show here on a Tuesday morning here, February 24th. You can follow the show on Twitter at LandGrant33. That's, of course, the feed for all of the Land Grant Holy Land stories. You can follow me at MattSBN and shoot me an email if you have a thought that cannot possibly be expressed within the majesty of Twitter characters at Matt.Brown@SBNation.com. This has probably not been the greatest couple of days as far as Ohio State is concerned. The hockey team is continuing to struggle. The Ohio State baseball team left some wins on the table against Florida Atlantic. But of course, the thing that everyone's talking about the most right now is Ohio State basketball. The last couple of years, like, it hasn't been totally unusual for Ohio State to start kind of slowly, especially within Big Ten play, and then sort of flip a switch and finish the season really strongly to be able to compete deep in the Big Ten tournament and make a run at a Big Ten title. And that hasn't really happened this year. We thought that might have been the case after the Buckeyes knock off two ranked teams in a row, and then near the end of January, they beat Indiana, they beat Maryland, both games at home, and that's kind of really cemented their ability to get into the NCAA tournament. But instead of finishing strong, despite with a relatively manageable schedule, the Buckeyes have faltered a little bit here. They have lost now two in a row, three out of their last five, all the losses on the road, including a bad loss against a not very good Michigan team on Sunday. That was 64-57. Buckeyes rallied to make this one a lot closer, but the first half was probably the worst basketball under the Thad Motta era, at least that I've seen in at least 2 years. Now, the 2 years ago when the Buckeyes played, I think it was at Wisconsin, and then they lost by like 25 points, and Amadeo was like the best player on the box score, and that was terrible. So things are trending right now in the wrong direction. That's led to a lot of hot takes, as it were, on the internet. You have the questioning the Thad Motta crowd, which I think is completely ridiculous. But that's happened a little bit here. We have some people wondering if Ohio State's actually going to make the tournament, which they are, barring some kind of absolute meltdown. I know the Buckeyes have four regular season games left. They got a home game this Thursday against a Nebraska team that's struggling very badly. To the point where Tim Miles has said he's going to literally lock their players out of the locker room, like bringing in like chains and bolting the door shut and having the guys figure out some other place to change. So clearly they've gone crazy. That's a game Ohio State should win. They have a home game against Purdue, who has played very well as of late. So the Buckeyes could have beaten them on the road. A little bit of a tough matchup due to Purdue's inside size in the front court, but still probably a winnable game. A road trip to Penn State, which is winnable, and then a home game against Wisconsin, which is probably not winnable, but the Buckeyes have played reasonably well at home this year. So I think you'd have to lose all of them to miss the tournament, or perhaps just beat Penn State and then lose the other three and then lose in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. But either way, that is a highly unlikely scenario. So there's still a lot of unanswered questions, though, at this point. You would think that a basketball team that is gifted with one of the a guy who's going to be a lottery pick in the NBA might be doing a little bit better. Maybe our expectations of Ohio State basketball for this season were misaligned to begin with. And so to help me make sense and to help all of us make sense of what's going on here with Ohio State, what we should expect moving forward and for next year, we're going to bring on our friend and probably our most successful Land Grant alumnus, Sam Vecenie of CBS. Sam, how are you?
Oh, I don't know. I still think that you and Luke are a bit more successful than me. I don't know if that's fair.
I don't know about that. We have a fancy office and everything here, but I'm just another hot takes dispenser on the internet like everybody else.
No, I love you guys. Thanks for bringing me on.
Of course. No, I'm glad to chat with you here. We miss some of your coverage here on the site, and there's a bunch of questions right now with Ohio State. And I guess let's start with this. This kind of happens with Ohio State basketball Twitter whenever they lose a game that maybe they shouldn't, or if they're not in the top three in the Big Ten, and there's kind of the sky is falling atmosphere here. And while this team might be a disappointment, maybe you disagree. What would you say to somebody that you wanted to talk them off the ledge for this team? Like, what reasons would you have to be optimistic about the rest of the season or the Big Ten tournament moving forward, if any?
I do think it's a pretty flawed team. Like, there's no player that can consistently take the scoring load off of D'Angelo Russell. Like, Shannon Scott's a really, really good distributor and a really, really good defender and a really, really good role-playing point guard. Sam Thompson never really developed beyond that role-playing level. Mark Loving, who the hell knows what's going on with Mark Loving. And then Cam Williams and KBD really just aren't really ready yet, it seems like, to take on a big load with D'Angelo Russell. So, you know, it's kind of a tough situation offensively because you have all these teams keying on Russell and you need someone else to step up, and no one really is. So having said that, this is still a team that is in the top 35 of both KenPom's adjusted offensive efficiency and adjusted defensive efficiency. They're still shooting an effective field goal percentage, 55% on the season, which is in the top 20 of the country. And they're still shooting 38% from three, even beyond all of this insanity that has taken over their offense and defense. Plus, they haven't lost a game by double digits yet this year, I believe. So they're losing close games because they're getting no energy level on the road whenever they go away from Value City Arena. I don't know what Mata can really do to get that. I mean, it seems like he's really tried to get Jayshon Tate involved a little bit earlier to give energy, get the spark. But it's just tough to figure out what he needs to do. Like, maybe it's Anthony Lee as opposed to Amir Williams, who's just been – we'll talk about him later, I'm sure. But, he's been bad. And – Maybe it's finding another way to get Russell involved early, maybe just playing him on ball more early as opposed to the way they play Scott on ball a little bit more early. I don't know what the solution is here, but there's definitely reason for optimism that they can figure it out because there's no computer metric that really doesn't love Ohio State at this point, given what they are. Like, they're still 17th in KenPom. Like, they're not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, and I think that just speaks to how Ohio State fans have been spoiled over the last couple of years. Where occasionally there's been teams that have been unwatchable, but nobody's been like actually bad. Like, you want to watch bad, you could go watch Rutgers or what Nebraska has been in times this year. If bad is a 9 seed,
like a solid 8 seed, I feel like right now.
What do you think? You know, if Ohio State was to win out, or you know, the best case and still like. Potentially like feasible scenario. What's Ohio State's seed ceiling, do you think? Could if they beat Wisconsin, win out, and then like get to like the Big Ten, like semis or finals, could they get to a 6? Or is it like 7-8 kind of like there?
No, I mean if they win out and win a few games on a neutral site for the Big Ten tournament, I absolutely think that their ceiling is like a 5 or a 6. Like, Everyone wants to like this Ohio State team because it's D'Angelo Russell and because all of their computer metrics are great and because their strength of schedule, I believe, is, you know, pretty strong comparatively to other teams. They got Louisville and North Carolina, even though they lost those games. They have the bad out-of-conference. But, you know, some of those out-of-conference teams, like High Point, James Madison, Marquette, those teams have ended up not being as terrible as what we expected early in the season, really. So that's going to help bring up the non-conference RPI a little bit. And then they've performed really well in the Big Ten outside of this little two-game rut where they lost by a combined 10 points to the Michigan schools on the road. Like, that's a road trip that's really difficult, that trips up a lot of teams. And there's no real reason to think that this team can't be a dangerous 7 or 10 seed if they end up in the bottom half of a bracket. And there's no real reason to think that they wouldn't be that they can't rise up to that 5 or 6 level. So I'm not optimistic about this team until they figure out like how to get their energy levels up on the road and on neutral sites. But I think that there's at least a level for optimism with this team that they're in the past, like, there have just been teams that, you know, are screwed. Like last year, it felt like Ohio State kind of knew that they were screwed a little bit because they couldn't get any sort of offensive impact. But this year, I think there's a little bit more reason for optimism than that.
Yeah, that's a good point. The idea of Ohio State struggling a little bit to build a complete offense has been true, I think, for the last couple of years, whether that's get out of the way for Deshaun Thomas, get out of the way for D'Angelo Russell, or last year, get out of the way for LaQuinton Ross, which was terrible. it's difficult to do that, but at least in this case, there's a lot of young talent, and your singular guy is better than it's been for Ohio State in the past couple of seasons. So, if D'Angelo Russell has a game in the tournament like he did, say, in the first half against Minnesota, Ohio State, in my view, can still beat a lot of different teams. It's difficult to go 1-5, but if that one guy has all the NBA Jam cheat codes turned on, it does make things a little bit easier. Let's talk about Amir for a second, because I cannot recall, like, not just like in Ohio State, you know, like media, Twitter, everything, but a guy like on a nationally relevant team that has been so completely bagged on by everybody. Like, Ohio State Twitter and a lot of fans were not happy with Amir after like his sophomore year, I think, because his flaws are very very evident, right? But it's effort. You don't need to go break down tape to go figure out that, you know, where he's failing and everything. And this year, I think we both agree he's taken a step back. But like, is how much of Ohio State struggles, one, do you attribute to him? And two, like, you know, it's not just us that have given up on him. Like, Bob Baptist is like semi-trolling this guy on Twitter, and like other like established media people. Can you recall anybody else, like either with an Ohio State or like with another like relevant team, where that everybody seems to bag on so much who still was like a rotational player?
I mean, it happens across the country. Like, stuff like this happens, I feel like. But I feel like Amir this year is the most nationally relevant guy that people bag on, and it's pretty earned at this point. I mean, if you remember last year, I wrote a big thing on why I think Amir was really good for Ohio State. Like he was active defensively, he was rebounding reasonably well, like he was at least protecting the rim, which is something that they really, really needed. And he's shown that in flashes this year. Like, for instance, I know that Mata said that he was the defensive MVP of the first Michigan game, and I don't really disagree with that, remembering how tough it was for Caris LeVert back when he was playing, and Derek Walton and Zach Irvin to really get around the rim at all. And it's just totally fallen off a cliff at this point. Like, I've heard that he doesn't like basketball from like a few people. I don't know whether it be that or not, but I mean, that's something that wouldn't really be a surprise to me. And it just sucks that it ended up working out this way for a former McDonald's All-American that was really, really, I mean, I don't know that he was super highly touted, because he was more of a surprise McDonald's All-American because of a weak center class that year. But he was still a top 50-ish recruit that just hasn't ever turned out to be anything beyond, I don't know that he would play on some of the top 25 teams nationally. Like, it's bad. His hands have totally gone away. Like, last year it felt like they got respectable, but his hands are pretty rough this year. His activity level defensively has just turned all the way down, and the rebounding's been okay, I guess. I mean, he has like a 20 defensive rebounding rate, but like the activity on the offensive end seems like has gone down. So it's really hard. I don't want to kill Amir. I think that Ohio State's problem is more that they don't have anyone else outside of Amir who has brought an impact. Like, Anthony Lee hasn't helped either. So, like, Amir hasn't been a solution, but he also, like, hasn't been the lone problem here either.
Yeah. It you know, he gets the most flack because he was the most highly regarded guy. He's been around the program for so long. I'm with you. I think you, me, and Luke were, like, the heads of the Amir Williams doesn't actually suck brigade last season. I mean, you know, he can shoot free throws. He can misdirect shots that don't always show up in box scores. Like, don't draft him on your fantasy team, but, you know, he does some things in this conference well, and other than, like, free throw shooting, it seems like everything else has really fallen apart. And, yeah, Anthony Lee's been hurt the past couple of games, and I don't know to what extent he was hurt and still playing earlier this season. But while, you know, expecting him to come in and play 30 minutes tonight was probably unrealistic, he probably hasn't brought the impact that I think this team probably was hoping for this season. So yeah, another year perhaps a mismatched roster.
It just kind of sucks. Like, I feel bad for the kid. It doesn't it almost doesn't look like he wants to be out there sometimes.
Yeah. That's the big thing. Like people can forgive you if you're bad at something, but you're trying. Like Tate, for example, I think is rapidly becoming one of the favorite guys on this team for a lot of fans. And his shortcomings are, besides, like, literally shortcomings, because he's 6'4" and likes to play down low, you know, it's readily apparent that he's a freshman and doesn't know where he's supposed to stand. And you can blow by him you can get around him. But he very visibly plays like he gives a crap. And so people are, you know, like, okay, and that isn't always the case here with Amir, and whether that's, like, perceived or accurate, it is unfortunate. And I imagine that if you heard all the crap that he's gotten over the last 3 years, it would probably weigh on you a little bit and make you maybe not love basketball as much.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's absolutely a great way to put it. You know, there's actually another really good example of that. I wrote a big thing last week on why I think Cliff Alexander should be playing more for Kansas, and I got all kinds of pushback from, you know, like, the two-thirds of it that thought it was smart analysis, and then the boisterous one-third that will only side with Bill Self in matters of Kansas basketball was like, oh, no, he doesn't give any effort. But here's the thing. You have Jamari Traylor out there with a defensive rebounding rate that's worse than Phil Forte's from Oklahoma State. So nice. Why is that more forgivable just because he's trying hard than, like, actually making a difference defensively? So it's, you know, I'm not even the biggest person on, obviously I'd love to see effort, and effort's very important in basketball, but, you know, like, I'm not even the biggest person on you need to be showing effort. As long as you're impacting the game, I'm okay with it, basically. But it's gotten to the point where Amir's not showing effort and he's not really impacting the game in a positive manner. And it just kind of sucks. Like, I feel bad for the kid. I hope that he finds something to do outside of basketball.
Yeah, I do too. There's something else I wanted to ask you about that I've been kind of digging around the last couple of days here since. There is a small minority, and dumb minority, in my opinion, of the Ohio State fan base that has kind of, you know, clamored against Coach Mata over between this year and last year of the team being a little bit disappointing. And we can get to that in a second about why these people are dumb. But, like, I was digging through, and, like, Ohio State's really only been, like, aggressively mediocre for, like, one or two seasons during this, like, entire era, and they only missed the tournament once. This is the 2007-2008 team, and I don't know how much of that squad that you remember, but, like, looking at this, I see a lot of similarities between that team and this year's squad. You know, there you have your five-star freshman. There was Costa Kufis, who was good enough to have big performances, but not good enough to, like, always be, like, the primary guy on the team. He had a couple of seniors, and Jamar Butler, Othello Hunter, and Matt Terwilliger, who were probably role players.
This was the Turner freshman year, right?
And John Diebler's freshman year, and David Leidy's a sophomore, and he's, like, just starting to come in there. So you have, like, this really talented young group that's not quite ready, a freshman who's really good, but doesn't have the supporting cast, and seniors who are unable to elevate there. And, like, while the year after that was a little bit of a struggle too, eventually, like, that freshman class became, like, the core of what became one of the best Ohio State teams ever. Do you think that they're, like, drawing similarities between, like, this year's squad and that era? Is that fair? Are they very different, or is there perhaps some silver lining? Like, well, you know, if by the time, you know, Bates Diop and Tate and Cam Williams, you know, get another year or two in the program, maybe that could be the foundation of something really strong.
No, yeah, I actually think you nailed this. I was trying to think about that earlier this morning. Like, whenever you sent me, like, what you wanted to ask me about, I tried to figure out who I thought the most analogous comparison was to this team, and that's the team I came up with, the NIT championship team. I think that this team has a higher ceiling than that one, just because D'Angelo Russell is just so clearly above and beyond what Kufis was, that you can count on him to carry everything, like everything that you need for a team. But, you know, it's actually a pretty valid comparison, I think. You know, I don't know that I would expect as much potential going into the future, just because you can't really expect anyone of this freshman class or anyone in basketball generally to take the leap that Evan Turner did between his freshman and sophomore, and then between his sophomore and junior years. Like, that's abnormal for someone to get that much better between both years. But, you know, like, I think that's a pretty fair comparison at this point. That team, you know, they had some offensive struggles. They were a solid defensive team like this one seems to be. It's a pretty apt comparison, I would say. You know, that was a pretty decent team that probably played a little bit. I would say that this team has a little bit more senior leadership as well. I mean, you've got Scott and Thompson, as well as whatever Amir and Anthony Lee are going to bring you, at least as older guys. That team really only had Jamar, right?
Yeah, Othello Hunter and you know, maybe, you know, was more of an, you know, he averaged about 10 points a game, but I don't know that Jamar Butler is necessarily the leader that Shannon Scott was. There's interesting chemistry situation with that team. Plus, there were guys that were getting rotation that were terrible, like PJ Hill, and I don't know if there's a guy like that. You know, even Trey McDonald, I think, is a little bit more useful.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, no, I'm totally on board with that. I think it's a pretty spot-on comparison, but I would think that, I mean, as far as comparing it to a past Ohio State team, but I think this team has a little bit more potential than that one does, just because D'Angelo Russell can go god mode at any point and just dominate. It's not that he turns it on and off, like, because he clearly doesn't. It's just he is so talented that when he's in rhythm and when he's really, really rolling, that there is no player in the country that can stop him.
Yeah, I can't recall seeing a guy with his passing instincts I've watched extensively in college basketball for the past couple of years. You know, clearly, you know, he's not a perfect player. Still has room to grow in a lot of places, but the angles he's able to get on some of these things here, and with guys that aren't that good. It's pretty amazing. Like, we are fortunate to have a chance to have been able to watch him for so much this year.
Yeah, no, he's one of the more creative passers that I've seen in college basketball in a while. He's just so fun to watch. I love him. I'm actually writing about a Big Ten Player of the Year race this year, and some of his numbers are absolutely insane. Like, the fact that Kaminsky is going to win this award is not an indictment on D'Angelo Russell. It's more of a statement on, holy crap, Frank Kaminsky is putting up, like, one of the most efficient college basketball seasons, like, in history.
Yeah, that was the other thing I wanted to talk to you about. Like, from my perspective, it seems like the Big Ten Conference as a whole is probably a little bit down compared to where it was the last year or two. And that isn't, like, a huge indictment on the conference. It was amazingly tough, over the last 2 years. And now, I mean, it's still going to probably send at least seven teams to the tournament. Wisconsin seems to be the really only elite one, or perhaps the one that's best equipped to make a deep tournament run. Do you think anybody else in the conference could get past the Sweet 16? And if not, what is it beyond that efficiency that makes Wisconsin so good?
I would say that Ohio State might have the best chance to do that, just because of if they can
star
get
power.
The right matchup, they can be. Yeah. They have the star power. If they get the right matchups, they can make a little bit of a run. And Michigan State's rolling right now too, to the point where I think that it took me a while to buy in on them this year. I was really, really down on them coming into the season, but they're really, really good offensively, and they're playing the typical solid Tom Izzo defense. So I'm pretty in on them at this point as well. Indiana is also a matchup team that can catch you on any night. I don't know that they can string three games together, but they're really, really talented when they get going. I mean, outside of as far as Wisconsin goes, I mean, they're one of the most efficient offenses ever. They have one of the best, they have the I guess he's somehow turned into the National Player of the Year favorite. I would still go Okafor over Kaminsky, but I think it's certainly close. They have Sam Decker. They have Nigel Hayes, both of whom have been incredible this year. That swing offense that Bo Ryan runs, he has literally the perfect team for it this year because he has a true five out like option at this point. Like everyone on that team can shoot. So it's really, really nearly impossible to stop them. I feel like you have Sam Decker crashing the boards from the wing. You have Kaminsky, who's able to score both from beyond the arc and from the block, and he's improved as a slasher. And then you have Hayes just doing kind of everything, both offensively and defensively. They're just incredible, and they're going to get Trey Jackson back, and I don't even know if it's going to – I don't know if he helps or hurts them is what's terrifying because Bronson Koenig's been perfect for that offense. So they're just one of the most efficient offensive teams I've seen in a long time, and that's why they're, I want to say, like 8 points clear of anyone in offensive efficiency in the Big Ten right now.
Yeah, the only real obvious flaw that I can think about them is that maybe their bench isn't the deepest. But when your starting five can roll out and shoot that way across the floor, it doesn't really matter.
That'll matter is if they get into foul trouble. But
yeah,
you know, here's the thing: like they play so slow that I don't know that getting tired basically on the floor is really going to be something that harms them as much as it could harm, say, like an Indiana who runs up and down the floor a little bit more. So, like, the fact that they play pretty slow is also going to help just their endurance levels generally. So it's interesting. And the fact that they don't have a bench really might come back and hurt them a little bit if they get the foul trouble. But, you know, it's going to be tough. It's really, really tough to find a spot where they lose.
Yeah. So there's one other thing I wanted to ask you, I guess, on that note here. With one of the, it's been amazing to see how this team has they've got this ridiculous efficient offense. Their players are tailor made here to the system, but it doesn't. I mean, they're one of the best teams in college basketball right now, and they don't have a ton of like lottery type talent. Is there anybody like Sam Decker? It seems to be somebody who's going to get drafted in the first round, and Kaminsky will probably be picked somewhere. What do you think about the NBA prospects for the guys on Wisconsin?
I think Kaminsky's got a shot to go lottery at this point.
Oh, lottery, okay.
With the way that the NBA is emphasizing spacing the floor and the fact that he's actually pretty good defending the pick and roll. Like, he's able to switch out onto guys. He's protecting the rim reasonably well this year, too. He has a block rate over 5. He's a really, really good defensive rebounder. Like, he's one of the top 20 or 30 defensive rebounding rates in all of college basketball. So I think that you can find a place for that kind of weapon, basically. And then Decker, I think I have Decker like late first round right now, but he's a guy that every time he goes to work out at one of these camps, like in the off season, everyone comes back raving about him and loving how good he is. So it wouldn't surprise me if he actually ended up being a riser throughout a draft process, like a season from the middle of April through draft day. Because I think he is going to wow teams in these workout settings because he's just done it in the past. And then I also have Nigel Hayes on my top 100. I don't think he leaves this year, but he's really good. He does a lot of different stuff. And if Draymond Green can find a spot in the NBA, I mean, he can too. But I worry that Hayes is a little bit more stuck at the 4 spot than Green is. I guess. I don't know. I have less faith in Hayes defending threes than I did Draymond. So
man, that's going to be very interesting. It'll depend a lot on what team he ends up with.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I assume he'll get drafted, and I think that he's probably like a late first, early second guy right now, whenever he decides to come out. So I'll be interested to follow him for the next year at least in college basketball.
Okay. I'll get you out of here on this then, speaking of NBA futures for other guys. Obviously, D'Angelo Russell, could, you know, on just about any mock draft that you look at right now is like a top 3 potential pick. And you know, maybe depending on who wins the lottery or what needs are, could there's a universe where he could conceivably go number one. But after that, as far as Ohio State is concerned, it's pretty thin. Do you see anybody else that could leave after this year as potentially being drafted? Is Shannon Scott somebody that could go in like the back of the second round and stick on a roster, or these mostly, you know, D-League European kind of guys?
It wouldn't surprise me if Shannon Scott or Sam Thompson got drafted in the late second. I don't have either. Well, I have Scott at like 67 on my board right now, and then I have Thompson off of it. But it wouldn't be a surprise to see – I think that Thompson will climb into my top 100 by the time all of the declarations and non-declarations happen, because you figure I'll probably lose 40 people off my board at that point. So I think that Scott can he's really, really good in the pick and roll. He's really, really good at making those pocket passes, and he's improving as a shooter every year. Plus, he's obviously a terrific defender. That's the kind of guy that you're looking for as a backup point guard in the NBA, someone who can caretake an offense like that and play smart basketball, because he's turning the ball over a lot more than you would like, but you can also see a circumstance where if he gets out in space, that would really, really help his turnover rate. And then Thompson, obviously, is just an incredible athlete, and it wouldn't be a surprise at all to see Sam Thompson go somewhere and thrive defensively just as a put him out on the floor and just let him annoy people on the perimeter. Plus, you can just have him run off a back screen towards the rim and have him space the floor that way. He needs to improve the jump shot a lot more. He shot, like, I want to say 40% either last year or the year before that, and it's just kind of regressed a little bit this year. So I'm gonna be interested to see how Thompson goes. I think he'll definitely get a lot of looks in the NBA scouting process this offseason. But I would say Scott is certainly a better opportunity to get drafted than Sam Thompson. And then the lower guys, you have Mark Loving, who's an interesting guy. He's a big like 6'7" shooter. Kata Bates-Diop is another big wing who is pretty long that you could see eventually developing into an NBA prospect. So there are a lot of guys that I'm pretty interested in at this point on Ohio State as an NBA draft guy. But, I mean, nothing beats D'Angelo Russell, right?
No, it's pretty hard to do that. And it'll be interesting to see how some of these other young guys develop. I would be shocked, if Loving left now, unless there's some other stuff going on here that we don't really know about. But there's definitely some people already on this roster and then in the class coming in that could potentially grow into first-round caliber kind of guys. My man, we have to go now. Real quick here, for the good people on the internet, if they want to read things that you're writing, where can they find you?
CBSSports.com. Just go to the college basketball section, and I think you'll see some stuff. I'm ranking NBA rookies today. I'm doing some conference player of the year races today. I wrote about that stupid ass court storming in Kansas State last night and night court last night. So there's some decent little stuff up there if you want to go to CBSSports.com and check it out.
All right. Well, hopefully they all do. Sam, it's always a pleasure. I'm sure we'll chat with you again. Try to get some sleep, and we'll talk to you later.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Matt.
All right. That's our buddy Sam. We've got a couple other good things that are going to be popping up here on Land Grant over the next couple of days. Our man Chad has been doing our advanced stats guy. He took a really, I think, deep and interesting dive into the efficiency statistics of Ohio State's wide receiving core to illustrate, one, exactly what Devin Smith brought to the program and how difficult that might be to replace, but then look at the candidates who could potentially do that. It was really eye-opening for me to see how efficient in terms of their pass-catching rates so many of Ohio State's targets are, which just goes to speak of how good the offensive line was and what a great job JT Barrett did for the majority of the regular season. We've got this. We've got a couple of the basketball editorials coming out here, so be sure to go ahead and check out Land Grant. We're at Land Grant 33. If you have not yet subscribed to the show and you found it to your liking, please do so. You can do that on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes.com/SB Nation or for Hangout in the Holy Land. I'm at Matt SBN. Matt.Brown@SBNation.com is the email. Thanks again so much here for listening to us. We'll have some more shows and more articles up later. But in the meantime, thanks for listening, and go Bucks.